All right, today is August 6th, 2010. This is the Intel Hub. We got an awesome, awesome show prepared for you guys today. We're going to be joined by Lucas, the founder of RabbitHole2.com. He's a researcher. And we're also going to be joined by Dr. Jason Rand, researcher and author of The Return of Planet X. Today, you guys can let your minds go wild with the possibilities. We're going to be discussing ancient civilizations, Planet X, near-Earth objects, asteroids, and a variety of topics, solar flares, storms, the whole nine yards, going over some of the latest research, talking to some of the best researchers right here on the Intel Hub. So it's a little off topic of what we normally do, but it's Friday, so should make for an interesting show. I'm going to read an article real quick. Asteroid threat. Don't worry, Congress is looking into it. This is by space.com, Space Insider columnist. Astronomers have long warned of a nasty encounter with a large space rock. But don't worry, there's a proposal in Congress to establish a commission to look into it. Lawmakers are paying new attention to how to best shield the Earth from a bad day, getting whacked by an asteroid or comet that has our planet in its crosshairs. The new bill introduced to Congress proposes establishing a government-sponsored commission to study the threat of a major space rock collision with Earth and how prepared we are as a country and a planet to face a disaster such as this. Goes on to say, there's a growing choir of concern regarding near-Earth objects, or NEOs, spotting them and dealing with any Earth-threatening gate crashers. Now, I've heard that they have these near-Earth object trackers on stand-down right now. So we're going to talk to Jason Rand about that, Lucas, see what they know. But this article goes on to say, we need to take the next step. Roerbacher told space.com, our NEO search and tracking program continues to move forward, but nobody is taking responsibility for protection. I am more confident than ever in our ability to identify potential threats from asteroids and comets, but it is critical to the future of humanity that we develop the capabilities to protect ourselves from these threats. It goes on and it talks about what's outlined in the bill, things like determine capabilities of United States government entities, non-government organizations, foreign governments and entities, international bodies to detect, characterize, and neutralize potentially dangerous near-Earth objects. Sounds like a bill that's going to put more space-based weaponry in the space to me. Looks like they're looking at gearing up with another weapons platform or something. When we come back, Dr. Jason Rand and Lucas, this is the Intel Hub. We're back. This is the Intel Hub. I'm your host, Shepard Ambellus. Right now, we're going to be joined by two amazing individuals. We're going to have kind of a round table on a variety of topics. I'm going to first introduce Lucas, founder of RabbitHole2.com. Well known for his Brave New Books presentation, a researcher. Lucas, how's it going? Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's going pretty good. I appreciate that. How you doing, Shepard?
Good, good. Hey, it's a pleasure. I'm going to pull Rand up now.
Okay.
And then we'll just get into it. This is going to be interesting. Dr. Jason Rand, he received his honorary PhD in the field of energy informative sciences from the Academy of Energy Informative Sciences conducted with Moscow University in Russia. He earned a distinctive recognition and his doctorate from their Russian Academy of Sciences on December 18th, 1992 in Moscow. He's authored three books, including The Return of Planet X. Jason Rand, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Shepard. And hi, Lucas.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, my friend. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for asking.
Hey, this is going to be pretty interesting, guys. I thought we could start out, and of course, I'm sure this is going to end up all over the place, but maybe we can start out by really trying to lay some of this stuff out to people. I know there's several Planet X researchers, and then we can get into all sorts of other topics too, but you know, there's Zachariah Sitchin, Jason Rand, Lucas, you've done some research. Maybe we can kind of think of all this research together and talk about a lot of topics and just see where it ends up. Jason, I was thinking we could start out talking about ancient civilizations, kind of laying out the groundwork from the beginning of some of these civilizations that document Wormwood or Planet X, or in Zachariah Sitchin's case, Nibiru.
All right, let's take that one head on. Let's make the topic, call it Planet X 101. How's that?
Yeah, exactly.
Lucas, is that okay with you?
Oh, that sounds good.
Let's build the course as we go. Okay, we'll present this to everybody. You, me, and Lucas will make up like a little manual here. How's that? All right.
Yeah.
Planet X 101. We believe that Planet X is not a planet, but a brown dwarf star. It's a brown dwarf star. It's called Wormwood. Let's go back to November 1983 when NASA made the brilliant announcement that their IRIS special infrared satellite telescope just picked up this unbelievably huge, massive, what looked like a slowly burning star, and it was a big object headed right toward our solar system from region of Orion. And it was announced. It was a radio, television, press reviews, all the commentators. 24 hours later, it was completely and utterly scrubbed from the face of the Earth in terms of information gathering. What happened was that they called it. They, in the press release, and we present copies of that article in our book, by the way, Return of Planet X, it appears that they called it Planet X. They put it in print. They didn't know what else to call it. They said so. They thought it was star. They weren't sure exactly what it was. So they called it Planet X. So let's establish that. That's the first rule in Planet X 101. The public didn't name Planet X. The government did. NASA, November 1983. 1984, a secondary article came out in U.S. News and World Report. We present copies of that also in the book, where they name it a brown dwarf star, the same Planet X object. Now, that's direct linkage. I didn't do it. They did it. So the reason we wrote the book was because we felt we had to distinguish what was Wormwood, was it Planet X, wasn't it, and what about Nibiru and Sitchin's theory of 12 planets, not the 8.5 that we have now. So where I'm going with this is to establish, I'll give you a real quick capsule review in my head of where I think this whole Wormwood scenario started. Let's jump back in time and space, 4.5 to 5 billion years ago. Just jump back with me. There were 12 original planets, just like Sitchin described. It's also confirmed in prophecies, cave paintings, and Vatican information, and in 1,000 different sources which we cite in our book. There is evidence that about every 36 to 4,000 years, some huge, unbelievably catastrophic event strikes the Earth. That we trace back 500,000 years into time, showing when each of these 36 to 4,000 year periods began and ended. And the very last one, we believe, was in 1447 BCE. So there's point number two now for Wormwood 101. We believe that the last time this phenomenon occurred, the last time this brown dwarf star came through our solar system, was in 1447 BCE, before the Common Era, 1447 BCE. Then we add 2010 under that, 2010. Now add them together. Okay, we're in the 3400 to 3500 year range mm-hmm. when this object is due to come back. The last time in 1447 BCE was when Moses was leading the Israelites out of bondage in Egypt after 400 years under Pharaoh's rule. And that would explain all of the unbelievable events that occurred in Exodus. The waters going red, the sun seemingly stopping in the sky, the seas parting, the huge earthquakes, all of these things that were described in Exodus are also echoed almost word for word in chapter 8, verse 11 in the book of Revelation of the Christian Bible, the last book of the Bible. Chapter 8, verse 11, and I'm quoting, "And the name of the star was Wormwood." That's where we believe the legend of Wormwood began. But how did it get out there, and where did it come from? We'll go back 4.5 to 5 billion years again. We're going to plot 12 planets and as many as 3 suns that were specifically designed for this solar system. We believe that this solar system, based upon years of research and reading and writing and notes, 3x5 cards that used to cover my living room wall, we believe that this is a real phenomenon event. Mm-hmm. It's been known about now for at least 100 years before this date. See, there were astronomers all the way back in the 1800s.
So, Rand, for the people listening,
that would happen.
Rand, for the people listening, really, there's so much evidence backing this. It's really just not a conspiracy theory at this point.
No conspiracy, none.
Yeah, I don't believe personally that there's a conspiracy either, because typically, I mean, if you can't press release this stuff out to the public, because if you did, the society would collapse. I mean, it's important that it trickles out to people of like minds and not as a press release on CNN one day, because we'll go into the event with a collapsed society.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's other mention of it, like in the Colburn Bible. It talks about when the blood drops upon the earth, the destroyer will appear, the mountains will open.
That term destroyer has been applied through thousands and thousands of years. We list at least 60 different names that Wormwood has gathered over the centuries. Now, these go back about every 36 to 4,000 years, one of these events happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that this event is about to reoccur right now in time with all the biblical prophecies falling into place. And I'm not going to the right or left on religion here. I'm simply stating fact, and I'm stating dates and events, nothing religious. I think we are in what is typically known in hundreds and hundreds of other religions and doctrines, is that we are at the end time.
Lucas, what do you think about that? Does this match up with some of your research?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. It's almost aligns perfectly with my line of thinking. Most of the myths, I believe, come from actual fact. Like, for instance, dragons. I believe that this event is known as the dragon. And, you know, when smaller things hit the Earth, they were also known as dragons, too. That's why you have no fossil records of any dragons on this planet, because they never really existed as an animal. They were just something that came down out of the sky and scared the locals half to death.
And, yeah.
Can you imagine today if that would happen?
Yeah.
It'd be Independence Day all over again.
Well, and a lot of these, like what people would consider myths, they have to come from somewhere. And when you start realizing a lot of these myths that we have are traced back through history, and they're recorded by multiple civilizations throughout history across the board, it starts to get interesting. Now, what do you guys think about this? From my research, it shows that there has been parallel civilizations in Egypt. Like, it a flourished there, and about 3,500, 4,000 years later, it had just you know, it'll go dead, and then it'll flourish, and then it'll go dead, kind of flourish, and you see this kind of pattern going back through time. Do you see any correlation with that? With any, like in Zacharias Hitchens' case, he talks about a planet called Nibiru, and there's Anunnaki that apparently are on this planet, and this is recorded in Sumerian history. And these Anunnaki...
That's where the plot thickens. Hey, guys, that's where I think the plot really starts to thicken. Let's consider this. Just try it on for size. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the 12 planets. I still didn't tell you guys how this little baby sun got kicked out, which became wormhole.
Oh, yeah.
So let's go back to that real quick. Another plot point for your 101 class. 12 planets, possibly with some moons in place, and very possibly three big a tri-star system, a giant black star somewhere way out at the very edge of the solar system as an anchor for our sun, and then a small baby star which was circling our mother star, the star that we experience every day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 4.5-5 billion years ago, there's 12 planets. The very outer ones were rocky because they were still in formation. There was no asteroid belt. That came later as the end result of the story that I'm going to now tell you. 4.5-5 billion years ago, a beautifully cast solar system, perfectly balanced, with two suns, inner, a small one. I'll tell you the size of that sun. Very possibly, that little baby sun, which was being nurtured by our mother sun, was probably the size of Saturn, but 60% its mass, a huge whirling hunk of fusion star that was just about to burst into fusion. By the way, our star is known as a fusion star. It's perpetual. Well, it has a time limit, another 6 to 8 billion years, I guess. The point being that it had a little baby sun. Now, without warning, and in a deadly fashion, 4.5 to 5 billion years ago, our solar system was invaded by a gigantic piece of asteroid, possibly the size of Earth or larger. This was a gigantic, deadly thing, and it collided through the plane of the ecliptic of our solar system. Our solar system, all the planets and moons and asteroid pieces, everything in our solar system, including our sun, rotates in a counterclockwise motion. This is extremely important. This is another plot point, by the way. This just plays into the mystery of how this little planet got kicked out into space. Everything in our galaxy rotates in a counterclockwise, as do all the other galaxies. We don't know or understand why, or it could be mathematical. Everything in the cosmos that we see seems to rotate in a counterclockwise motion. Now,
that'd be weird if it was like, you know, when you flush your toilet and you're on one side of the hemisphere and things spin one way, and on the other side they spin the other way. It'd be weird if there was some kind of a dividing line somewhere and they started spinning the other way.
Oh, absolutely. Now, in this wonderful mystery and drama of all these planets whirling in perfect harmony, can you imagine, just for a second, can you imagine whatever computer program designed not only our sun and every planet in it, but who actually balanced out the equation to let this solar system work in perfect harmony? You see, the sun is responsible for all of the other objects that it controls, and our Earth, being the third planet from the sun, the third rock from the sun, is involved in a scenario where no matter if anything affects our sun from outer space, coming in, going around, coming at it, pushing like two magnets, if anything affects our sun, it immediately affects all of the other objects in its control, which is us. Why all the heat? Let's jump forward if I can right now. With all this unbelievable heat, I live in the northwest corner of Mississippi. Once again today, it was almost 97 degrees, and the heat index was like 105 or 106. That's deadly for some people.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with Mother Earth and all of her weather systems. It has nothing to do with just global warming, and it has nothing to do with the possibility of global cooling. In fact, it's a fact that the planet is simply confused because of the behavior of the sun, which just now, and it's just been announced, the Earth, even as we speak, is being affected by a series of large solar plasma ejections.
Absolutely. Lucas, what do you think about that and these solar flares and plasma ejections? You know, I heard there's even a guy now that can predict earthquakes based on the solar cycle or the sun's activities. But it looks like we're getting bombarded. Lucas, what do you know about that?
Well, obviously, if you know, the crust is like floating on a layer of magma, and if it gets bombarded with subatomic particles, that could definitely loosen the crust. Because I mean, it's amazing how these subatomic particles, and also give cancer too, are busting through the human body and breaking the DNA chains. You know, that's why the cancer is probably up so much. You know, it's really interesting to look back at the ancient history of the planet. Find out that the Nile used to run east to west, and that the rivers in the United States used to run east to west. So that would kind of give you the idea that, I mean, if you like open up Google Earth and you take the world and you just grab the top of it and drag it, like the whole planet tilted its axis. Maybe, you know, like the doctor
was
saying.
Hold that thought, Lucas. We got to go to break. We'll be right back with Lucas and Dr. Jason Rand on the Intel Hub. We are back. This is the Intel Hub. We're joined by Dr. Jason Rand. Of course, his website is returnofplanetx.com. It's returnofplanet-x.com. And Lucas's website is rabbithole2.com, talking about all sorts of subjects. You know, these solar flares, Lucas, NASA has even talked about how they anticipate these flares to get worse over the next few years. Can you kind of go back into what you were talking about?
Well, yeah, the you know, like it says in a lot of the ancient texts about the heat, and it seems like the sun is on a definite cycle. You can see it in the ice core data. Something is causing a cyclical pattern in our, you know, the ice ages and the history throughout the world. And I was mentioning about the rivers flowing east to west, the Nile River and all the rivers in the United States, you know, it would tell you that the one point in time the planet was at a different orientation. The Egyptians used to celebrate a 360-day calendar, and they had to somehow switch it to 365 days because the orbit changed. They talk about Earth being destroyed and recreated on a new wheel, talking about a new orbit around the sun. And I suspect that whatever the heavy, dense object is out there, that the gravitational pull at certain points in time pulls the Earth away from the sun. That's why the days increase. And at certain points of time pulls us back closer to the sun. And that's why we get these 20,000-year warm periods that humanity seems to blossom in.
Well, an observation I made, guys, is if you go on Google Earth and you kind of zoom out a little bit, you look at the topographical view of the United States, especially up by the Great Lake areas and the East Coast flowing down by the Mississippi, you'll notice that you can literally see where the Great Lakes spilled over and just freely flowed. It almost looks like if you dumped a bucket of water onto dirt or the sand, and it carves all these ripples through the earth. You'll notice over in the Middle East where stories out of the Bible took place, and you know, when the, like, it could go back to where the great to all the way to the Great Flood or something. But you'll notice if you go over to the Middle East on Google Earth and you zoom out and you zoom in and you kind of play with the program a little bit, you'll see where you can tell this massive flood just came in and washed over everything. It just looks like water coming in from an inlet, and it just carved all these channels and stuff. It's just real interesting. You know, just by looking at it, you can tell something has happened on this planet.
Well, you look at the mass dinosaur graves in Colorado and things like that in Utah. Why are there mass dinosaur graves in Colorado and Utah? Because maybe giant tsunamis washed their carcasses up to the base of the mountains and left them there?
Yeah, there's bones, I heard, filled up into the back of caves at major elevations, as if water had reached up in there and just kind of washed a bunch of stuff in the caves and stuff. Rand, what do you think about all that?
Well, these are classic. You guys are right smack on target. I mean, everything that you guys said, we got to put that on the board. Agreed, everybody? That was a good point that you brought up. In fact, it was the basis for earth changes, you mm-hmm. see? And what we're seeing now is the fact that we are being caught up in a current batch of earth changes, just like we've been describing on the air now for a couple of years and with the book. This thing, this planet, this brown dwarf star, is beginning now to recycle back out again, and it will be passing that null zone on or about December 21st, 2012. You see how that date ties in now. How come you know that? Well, it's not something you know. It's what the pieces point to. It's what the legends describe. It's what the prophecies dictate. And if you are hip with current events and are near a computer, there isn't any information that you can't find out that we're talking about. There's nothing that Lucas is saying or that I'm saying or Shepard is saying that cannot be fully researched. So when we speak to you about these things, at least from me, I'm letting you know what I believe is the truth about these matters, okay? Now, I think we're living in a most unusual and fortunate time. How exciting it is to see our planet and our solar system about to become part of a gigantic galactic shift for the entire solar system. We on Earth will go along for that ride, whether we like it or not.
Now, would you consider this a great shift, Jason Rand?
Yes, this is one of the major, that when the Mayans talked about the end of time, they were talking about the end of cosmic time. See, not time like you look at your watch, not that kind of time.
Did you guys know that...
Lucas, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah. Did you guys know that the charter for the Federal Reserve ends on December 21st, 2012?
Yeah, I heard that. That is pretty interesting.
Hey, yeah. Guys, I think there's a lot more going on that all of us together know, but at the same time, we already know a vast amount of stuff. And it sounds like the focus of the American Freedom Radio is to wake people up. Am I close?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So when we talk about these things, not to scare people, oh, my God, the sky's falling. We're all going to die. No. No, that's not what we mean by the sky is falling, okay? We got some rough times coming. If this weather continues to be as weird as it's been acting all over the planet, and again, we still have to face this hurricane season. We're only two or three storms into it. I'm hoping, as we've been saying, that this will not be a difficult season for us, that we will get through this summer and this fall with a minimum of hurricanes, because we've got that well situation that is still being pursued and cannot be interrupted. See?
Yeah. So that's a scary situation.
And yeah. You know what? Some of this may be due to Planet X.
Well, I was thinking that Dr. Rand and Lucas, you can elaborate, but we've seen pictures of the seafloor breaking up. Also, you know, it's written into some prophecy that the seas will turn red. We're starting to see that now out in the Gulf of Mexico. You know, all of this is kind of just strange.
Well, yeah, it says in the, you know, it says right in the Bible that in the end, you know, that these times that there will be
one third of
the oceans will be poisoned. Now imagine thousands and thousands of oil rigs all over the world, and the ocean's seafloor starts cracking all over the place.
Right. Yep. You have a half a million wells seeping oil, not one.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're seeing that. I mean, there is multiple oil leaks going on. There's several in the world. And then now all of a sudden this pipeline just breaks in Michigan magically. And another, a second oil well in the Gulf. So right now we've got...
There was a gas rig in Venezuela too.
And there's sinkholes opening up all over the planet everywhere.
Yep.
Hey guys, I think we're in big, big trouble. What do you think?
It looks like things are going on everywhere, and like, you know, Lucas was saying, even the sinkholes. Have you guys seen those sinkholes in Guatemala?
Oh yeah, yeah. I think that this is the me personally, on my own personal note, I think this has something to do with the regulation of humanity, that this is created as a means to, if you look back at Noah, okay, Noah's genes moved on, and all the people that laughed at him, they didn't do so well. And what I'm getting at is that on this planet, we're the only species that seems out of place of all the other creatures on here. All the creatures on the planet have an equilibrium with each other that matches, and they've been doing that for thousands, millions of years. And we come into the picture, and everything is different. We don't have anything to regulate our natural selection.
We're the bad vibe.
We're our own regulators of natural selection with war and things like that. But I believe that whatever created this whole big gigantic universe here put this in place to basically regulate humanity so that we didn't get to be 12 billion people and destroy the whole planet.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's beautifully stated. Beautifully stated.
Yeah, that's what makes me mad about the New World Order, because I don't need them to regulate the population when Mother Earth, that should be up to Mother Earth, apparently.
Well, the main thing of the Georgia Guidestones that I point out is the fact that it says maintain humanity. It doesn't say reduce population down to 500 million. And, you know, the elites are so hubris, they just come out and say whatever they wanted to. It says maintain humanity, so that means that it's after the fact of something happening.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So
right.
Almost like they were erected that monument in preparation for such an event. You know, guys, that brings me to my next point. Maybe we can get it. I think we should lay a little bit more groundwork on some of these ancient civilizations. I know the Hopi has some documentation of this thing, a couple other things like that. But the need for the elite to gear up with underground bases to start setting up infrastructure makes me wonder what they know. Why would you erect the Georgia Guidestones if you basically, you know, I mean, it looks as if some event is coming. They erected the Georgia Guidestones. Like you said, it almost alludes to the fact that's supposed to be there after an event. Like, future civilizations will find that it's written in 9 languages.
The Guidestones are actually a clock, and they will help whoever's left to realign and figure out how many days are left and the growing seasons, because that's something you need to do very fast, is figure out what the growing seasons are, because if you don't, you're going to lose a lot of people that way.
Yes.
Yep. And another thing we're starting to see with some of these elites, such as Bill Gates, you know, they're getting involved. All of a sudden, there's seed vaults. You know, it's like, what are they gearing up for? You know, something's going on, and they know a little bit of inside information, because they have access to all the technology, all the satellites, all the surveillance equipment. Hey, that reminds me, Rand and Lucas, have you guys heard that they actually put... I don't know if this is a rumor or what, but they put the near-Earth object telescopes on stand-down.
On where?
On stand-down. I've been told, and I'm trying to confirm this, that they had put some stand-down on the near-Earth object telescopes as if they know they're going to start spotting something and they don't want them to release information. I've also heard that seismologists have been contacted from the Department of Homeland Security, and their seismograph information that they're allowed to release can't be released unless they go through the Department of Homeland Security. It's a matter of national security, apparently.
Well, they classified space rocks as top secret in 2009. No longer is that information released to the public.
So, you know, I'm just wondering, Rand, if that signifies this thing's getting closer, and they don't want these observatories to start spotting this thing.
Let me place something very unpleasant, but a reality which I think we all must consider. I believe, as is the thinking, that there may be some kind of a natural disaster that will occur between now and November 10th, when everybody votes, and that would precipitate the calling of martial law.
Mm-hmm.
If martial law should be declared for, could be a legitimate reason, we could have a terrible earthquake somewhere. I'm just saying, if martial law was declared sometime before November 10th, there would be no elections.
Mm-hmm.
There would be this basic suspension of a lot of constitutional rights because the government would swing into a militaristic mode, and they would basically lock down the major cities, or they would try to, and the major population centers, and get ready for whatever might be coming our way.
Now, yeah, and they've been trying.
I don't see that as a conspiracy, by the way. I'm not going to conspiracy.
That's very possible, Dr. Rand, and they've been training for this basically day in and day out. Hundreds of documents on training for terrorism drills, spills of national significance, such as the Gulf oil disaster.
Sure.
Things.
But this is good. All this prep is good.
Yep.
Yeah, not only that, we've got to watch out for invasion of foreign countries from, you know, whoever is going to get the worst of this is probably going to be invaded by whoever's left.
Yep. And this tension now between Israel and Iran and us and everybody in the mixture, this whole terrorism thing. See, this is another whole dimension of Planet X or Wormwood. Call it what you will.
We got a break. We'll be back on the other side. Dr. Jason Rand and Lucas, you're listening to the Intel Hub.
Warning. American Freedom Radio. This habit forming. Use the truth carefully.
We're back. This is the Intel Hub. I'm your host, Shepard Ambellis. We're joined by Dr. Jason Rand. Of course, his website is returnofplanetx.com. And we're also joined by Lucas. His website is rabbithole2.com. Rabbithole2.com. I encourage you to check out both their sites. You know, Dr. Rand, your book is probably one of the best books I've ever read, if not the best book. I was literally glued to it. It has some nice artwork, and you lay out everything extremely well in a fashion that you can just understand, and it's just all right in front of you. So I encourage anyone who hasn't read The Return of Planet X to go get that book right away, because it's actually a Dr. Rand.
By the way, thank you for that very, very gracious compliment. For anyone who would like an autographed copy, I'm going to have you post a number. Would that be okay with you?
Absolutely.
After the show?
Go ahead.
And people, if you want to give me a call, I'll answer the phone, and I'll take a personal order from you, and I'll send you an autographed copy. How's that?
Absolutely. Go ahead and give out the number.
All right. 901-336-9660. 901-336-9660. I will personally talk with you and work out a purchase with you and get it to you as quickly as possible. Okay.
Well, I suggest everyone does that, because when you read this book, it'll really open your eyes to a lot of this stuff. You know, Dr. Rand and Lucas, we were talking about martial law, a little bit about the Gulf oil disaster. You know, I kind of feel like this in my gut. When I started researching the New World Order, you know, of course, it takes you down a lot of different roads. You get into more and more stuff. You know, I was aware of the Planet X issue since I was, you know, 14, 15 years old. And, you know, I started checking into all this other stuff, even getting into UFOs and stuff. But one realization I've came to is they quite possibly could have been gearing up for Planet X. When people generally talk about the New World Order, they're like, oh, New World Order is going to declare martial law. These elites are going to do this, and this. But a lot of people don't take into consideration the real possibility behind all of this is actually the fact that the IRS satellite discovered Planet X, and then we had the Rex 84 program implemented with Oliver North. We saw the concentration camps being built. We saw FEMA kind of pop up. We saw these underground bases starting to be built, and then their construction's been accelerated. They're going deeper and deeper. I mean, what do you need to be 1 to 4 miles beneath the surface for? You know, if it's the general public you're worried about, or even the military from another country or something, you know, you would think you could just kind of carve out a mountain and put a big vault door on it. What's the purpose of going 4 miles below the surface in some cases with these underground bases? A lot of this looks like they could have been gearing up for such a scenario. What do you guys think about this, Lucas?
Oh, yeah. I actually believe that World War II was based upon this whole event. That what most people don't know, the secret history of World War II, is that you know, while all this stuff was going on with the war, the Nazis were spanning the globe for evidence of Atlantis and all the ancient artifacts, and that was one of their main concerns. And I have a feeling that the swastika itself is not a Nazi symbol. It comes from a time back in India a long time ago. I believe that the swastika is the symbol of the destroyer, and that you know, it was just adopted by them at the time. And once the elites found what they were looking for, they basically ended the war, brought all the scientists that they needed under Operation Paperclip here to the United States, gave a couple people up to the wolves at the Nuremberg trials, took all the heads and put them down there in South America, and went about their business like nothing ever happened.
Yeah, that's pretty much what my research shows.
That Rand, pretty well wraps that, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. That, you know, it's almost like that movie, The Raiders of the Lost Ark, with Harrison Ford. They're going after the Ark. Hitler was going after everything. He was even trying to reach the inner Earth.
Did you guys know that he had actually at least built one or two operational UFO flying type craft?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then
the Russians and us fought to get to there in time. To capture that technology.
Yeah, and they rolled a lot of this stuff into our underground bases, our projects, the S-4 facility, Area 51, all these, you know, Von Braun, all these people got rolled in, of course, and then they started the reverse engineering on some of these craft that they had. Some of it was technology. You know, it makes me wonder, because how they were going after technology. You know, for instance, Sumer is modern-day Iraq. We saw the launch for the first Gulf War. The incursion was actually called Operation Planet X. That's what the code name for the incursion was. I've heard they went over there looking for religious relics and Stargate technology, you know, just rumors of this kind of stuff, but it really makes you wonder if these ancient civilizations had technologies stored away or stowed away somewhere, you know, hidden underground. What's in the Ark of the Covenant? What's really behind some of this stuff? What's your thought on that, Jason Rand?
That sounds like a great Star Trek episode, you guys. wouldn't that be a great storyline for that?
There you go.
Here's what I think. All of the above that you guys are talking about is right smack on target. See, I didn't want to go too way out or too mystical or, you know, too metaphysical, but I think that this whole thing is one huge cosmic dance way beyond our comprehension and our understanding and our ability to control it. I'm talking about the solar system issue and the brown dwarf. Forget all of our problems with each other as humanity.
Well said, Rand. We got a break. We'll be right back. Dr. Jason Rand and Lucas. We're back right here on the Intel Hub, top of the second hour. Guys, we got a short segment right here before we got to go to another break. It's about a five-minute segment talking about all sorts of stuff with Dr. Jason Rand, author of The Return of Planet X. His website is returnofplanetx.com. We're also joined by Lucas, a researcher, founder of rabbithole2.com. A lot of great topics. You know, so many things surrounding Planet X. What, Rand, from your research, and then we'll go to Lucas, does it show that Planet X causes major havoc every single time it passes, or does it vary in the distance it comes within Earth every time? How does that work?
This is a totally unknown science. This is the first time that mankind may ever experience, at least in modern-day history, viewing a brown dwarf star. There's always some element involved with the Earth. Sometimes it could be very bad. Sometimes it's minor. Hopefully this time will be a minor passing through our system. You see?
Lucas, what do you think about that? Have you heard anything to the contrary?
Well, when looking at the ice core data, there's a definite pattern in there. And it seems that, like I mentioned before, that this object not only brings us out of, but throws us into the ice age. And it looks like we're about at the end of the warm period that this planet's experiencing and about to be thrown towards an ice age. So, yeah, I'm hoping it's not going to be that bad. I'm more worried about ocean slosh. You know, if the axis of the world tilts or something, the oceans literally come up out of their beds and encompassing the different nations. That's more of my concern than anything.
Well, that's a whole other issue, because from what I understand, most of the ocean's mass is concentrated by the equator of the planet, and if it gets into a wobble, that can kind of slosh around.
Yeah, because of the centrifugal force of the planet spinning, the most of the mass of the water is concentrated on the equator. So if that goes off balance, that water's got to go somewhere. Just like in a tub, if you throw a rock in it, it's gonna you know, slosh all over the place.
See, and that's what I was telling you guys about going on Google Earth. Anyone who's listening right now that's near their computer, you know, I challenge you to check it out. But literally, go on Google Earth and kind of zoom in and out on the United States, up by the Great Lakes, up by the eastern seaboard, all the way down by the Mississippi River. Zoom in and out in the Middle East, and you'll see these massive flow patterns. It's absolutely amazing. I can't believe they didn't teach us about that in school. When I saw that, it was just so evident that there has been sloshing like that on this planet before.
I'd like to add a very interesting element to exactly what you've just said. Okay, imagine this. If I said to you that the Earth's physical speed in motion as we fly through space is 18.5 miles per second through space, our planet is moving through space along with all the rest of the solar system, including the sun, at 18.5 miles per second. All of us moving together at that speed.
That's crazy. Rand, hold that thought. We'll be right back on the other side. You're listening to the Intel Hub. A couple more good segments with Dr. Rand and Lucas. We'll be back.
Yo, what's up? Check this out.
The voice of the revolution. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
We're back. This is the Intel Hub. I'm your host, Shepard Ambellis. Man, you guys can let your head spin today. Let your minds go wild with all the possibilities we're talking about right here with Dr. Jason Rand and Lucas. Dr. Rand, where do your views differ from Sitchin's in your research? And can you kind of get into some of the things Sitchin talks about and some of the things that you've researched and kind of explain similarities and, discrepancies?
Okay, well, first of all, Sitchin's Sitchin's basically the Bible. I mean, I have the greatest admiration. He pioneered the road, and he broke the story. So I have nothing in opposition to him. I like to take it beyond what he proposed. I find that very possible. Nibiru, as you called it, is in fact one of the original 12 planets, and it may or may not be inhabited. Question is, if it does exist and if it is inhabited, where is it, and how does it sustain itself? Well, here's one theory for you. When the baby sun got kicked out of orbit after colliding with the giant rock, it spun the baby sun, Wormwood, out into a huge, elongated, narrow, elliptical orbit out into deep space, where we believe, as it's now returning from, this is where it goes out to the dark black star that they say anchors our sun. Mm-hmm. Just a theory. I didn't come up with it. If this is a possibility, then it could very well be that when the little baby star got kicked out of its orbit, now going into a clockwise orbit. Remember I mentioned that everything in the solar system, including the sun and all the other stars in our galaxy, everything rotates in a counterclockwise motion. When this object came in, it hit the baby star head on, sending it into a complete reverse. Now it's coming back at us about every 36 to 4,000 years, but as it comes back in opposition to our counterclockwise motion. It's coming in a clockwise motion. Now, doesn't hit anything, doesn't collide, it can cause big problems almost everywhere, anywhere that it goes near, because of its mass, density, and other equations. Now, if this is happening right now, it simply means that we are part of a much grander cosmic game plan than mankind understands and cannot control. We may have no choice about the natural disasters happening on the planet other than we set ourselves up because of what we've done to the seas and the land and the trees and all this other stuff. This conversation's not about what we've done badly. We set ourselves up for a series of problems and tragedies which we just now suffered and are still suffering out in the Gulf. See?
Oh, yeah.
I think we're headed for a real tough, tough time with natural disasters.
And we need
to be prepared.
I feel like that, too. What do you think, Lucas?
Oh, yeah, I definitely do, too. I think that I personally believe that there's going to be it's going to be a twofold event, that the first event is going to basically take out about a third of the world's population, and it's going to happen along the coasts, and that's what's going to be known as the rapture or whatnot, and then there'll be another event down the road that will result in humanity being taken back to close to the Stone Age. And, you know, the reason I say, the way I look at prophecy is a little different than a lot of people. I think that some of these people 500 and 600 years ago, like Mother Shipton and Nostradamus, might have had access to books that no longer exist today. And if you know of a cyclical event, any one of us, any person that survives this event can write about it and say 3,600 years from now, this is what's going to happen. And at that time, they'll be looked at as a prophet because of the fact that they just knew about a cyclical event that was going to happen. Now, I propose that maybe these people, because Nostradamus had access to vast libraries of information, and it looks as though maybe some of these people just had inside knowledge of a cyclical event and were able to foretell the future based upon that information.
There's yet another element, guys. How about the UFO ET element in all of this?
Yeah. Well, and we can get into that, and Rand, what do you guys make of this? I mean, this is where it gets a little weird and suspicious to me. You know, you had a downgrading of Pluto. They downgraded it from a planet. You've had openly admitted other planetary bodies have entered our solar system. UB313 Eris, the satellite of Eris named Dysomia, which in Greek mythology is Eris's daughter and the demon spirit of lawlessness. You know, there's openly admitted other planets moving into our solar system they've just now discovered. What's the chance of a cover-up going on with any of those orbital patterns, flight paths, anything like that? And I talked about the possibility that the near-Earth object telescope tracking systems have been put on stand-down. Any chance that Eris or any of these relatively new spotted objects could be something moving in and they're covering up any data from us?
It could be all of the above, and only and maybe only part of the above, and or it could have. See, one event triggers a response from another event. See, for every action there's a reaction, for every input there's an output. Now, I'm going to go to a safe zone here. We all know, everyone on the planet, I don't care what country, I don't care what language you speak, you know, as does every person in the United States, at least most adults, there's something really wrong with what's going on, not only in our country, in politics and business, and this and that, and terrorism, but there's something really wrong with the planet itself. And I do believe that the American public, as is most of the planet now, they're very hip on this whole thing. See, I still don't see conspiracies here. What I see is preparations being made, probably the best and only way that they could be made, and that is in secrecy.
Yes, I agree with that totally, because where I used to see conspiracies...
You know, to pull this off without a game plan.
You know, where I used to see conspiracies, now it all makes sense because of the fact that you cannot go public with this information. It'd be impossible. And, you know, it's really important that we maintain humanity. But at the same time, I mean, it's a catch-22 situation here. You know, here they're telling everybody with all these disaster shows on the TV, with the Georgia Guidestones, with the murals at the Denver airport. Oh, which I wanted to mention, too, most people don't know that. Like, you can get online and you can listen to any scanner across the country on this certain website, and the Denver International Airport has a scanner, and you can go and you can look at the different channels that they have on their scanner, and one of their channels is called Stargate.
Hey, that's a little suspicious. Seems how it's speculated that Denver International Airport's a major underground base, and who knows what else.
Did you ever notice that the Hilton logo is the spiral in front of the World Trade Center, and the logo for Time Warner Cable was a spiral in the eye? You know, here all this stuff is going on, and this giant spiral appears in Norway, and they try and tell us it's a Russian rocket, and nobody that I showed that to believed that.
That's another thing, that Norway spiral. Well, we are hurtling through space at 18.5 miles per second.
On a I'd like to mix it up one more time with a. I want to go back to this UFO ET thing. I firmly believe, and of course I'm a proponent of the field of ufology. I believe that we are going to have what is properly or improperly labeled as some kind of a rapture, which simply means somebody's going to come back and take care of us and probably pick us up and save us, like I believe it's been done hundreds of thousands of times through the history of mankind, maybe as far back as a million or 2 years. I think that there's been an ET element that has been shepherding this whole thing, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but anyway, we're here, we're functioning, and now I think that we are to look for some kind of help. At least I believe and I hope that they understand that we need the help, because we can't do it by ourselves. What would you do with 100 million displaced Americans? What would you do with them?
Exactly. have you seen the movie Knowing with Nicolas Cage? It's all about that. It's exactly what you just said. Yeah. And, you know, there's other aspects of this that haven't been talked much about, and that is messing with the Earth's magnetic field and the way the human brain works and the Tower of Babel and why everybody lost their voice and why everybody forgot how to speak, possibly because of the fact that the electromagnetic field of the Earth was changed so tremendously that they their brains were scrambled. And maybe the talk of the dead shall walk the earth in the Bible has to do more or less with the brain dead shall walk the earth. So what is the country going to do with millions of people that are basically brain dead, completely back to primordial state? All they know how to do is just run after things and grab them and bite them. I mean, we're coming into a situation that could be, you know, would be called zombies, I guess.
Wow, interesting point. You know, that movie Knowing, you were talking about with Nicolas Cage, that also depicted the oil rig fire in the Gulf in the movie.
Yep.
Also, I was thinking about this too, the Vatican, you know, the Pope basically admits there's ETs, talking about they come from a place far away and they've had communication with them, I believe. It's something along those lines, how he worded it. And they have this massive metal sculpture of Planet X on display at the Vatican.
You see, you guys know a lot more than you're letting on here. This is great. There isn't a thing you guys have said that is not absolutely true. And I guess that's why your show reflects a viewpoint of us not being afraid to say what we want to say, you know?
Well, we're at a point now where, you know, it doesn't really matter. They don't really care too much what we say anymore because everybody's coming along and they want the public to survive this.
Chemtrails,
all right, they contain barium. For years I listened to people tell me chemtrails are killing people, but yet I have yet to find one person that has died from a chemtrail. So I started researching it, and I, you know, come to the understanding that they're, you know, full of barium, and barium is what? It's an absorber. It's a getter. It absorbs radiation and X-rays. Uh-huh. And so you have to understand that they're using the chemtrails to keep the radiation down. I mean, because if not, we'd probably all be dead of cancer already.
Well, there you go. And this is crazy. I was talking to G. Edward Griffin. They're making a new chemtrail movie, him and Mike Murphy, called What in the World Are They Spraying? And, of course, I'm the only person to interview a CIA chemtrail-based worker from the inside. We've also interviewed former NSA, CIA, who's worked in another chemtrail facility at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. But I was telling him this, and this is crazy because I read this somewhere. Sitchin wrote this, that the Anunnaki on planet Nibiru were injecting gold particles into their atmosphere because their atmosphere was so messed up. And it just reminded me of the chemtrails.
If this Nibiru story has an ending or a conclusion, let me throw in one more possibility at you about it, about its reality or fiction.
Mm-hmm.
If, in fact, when this object invaded the solar system and clashed with several of our planets and kicking the baby sun out into space, if, in fact, this baby sun was big enough, it was possibly the size of Saturn, but 60 times its mass, maybe it snagged Nibiru on the way out because of its mass. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, because Nibiru would probably be the size of Earth, not the size of Saturn. So let's say that this baby star that was just kicked out of the solar system, somehow or another, just sucked this planet, maybe so close to it, it just pulled it out with it. And it might have been inhabited. How do we know it wasn't? Now, who's to say that this baby sun, this errant wormwood object, isn't strong enough to give that planet the heat and warmth that it needs? If it's close enough, we don't know how the radiation totally works. It may be a radiation-type sun rather than what we call a fusion sun. See?
Right.
So, if if it's a possibility. That's why Sitchin says what he says and writes what he writes, because he's probably got about 95% of the equation right.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I think that the key factor here is what's giving Nibiru its sustenance and its life and its power. I think it could be this baby son, Wormwood.
That's a good point.
So they're both coming back. They're both coming back. We just don't know about the second object. We can't see it. It's behind the sun.
That's a good point, Dr. Rand. And, you know, I was thinking about this, too. The life cycle on the planet, because of its orbital pattern and the amount of years it takes to revolve around the sun, might be different. You know, in the Mormon Bible, this is absolutely strange to me. My friend brought a Mormon Bible over one day, and he's like, dude, you got to look at this. And I'm like, okay. And there's this seal they found, supposedly Joseph Smith found in some mound in the mid-east of the United States or something like that. And just from my research right away, I said, that could be a Nephilim burial mound. Apparently, the Nephilim were buried in these big mounds. They were, a giant type species that was on the planet a while ago. As you see the translations of the King James Version from the Old Text, back in the Old Text, they would talk about different physical species that existed in the Bible, such as Nephilim, Cephalim. And then you go to the New King James Version, and it takes out Nephilim, and it says giants. But in the Mormon Bible, there's a seal, and it has all this crazy Reformed Egyptian writing on it. And it says stuff like, if he can figure out these numbers, so be it. It gives some dates and some times and some weird stuff. And then it talks about how God resides on this planet. Literally, this is what it says. God resides on this planet called Kolab, K-O-L-A-B. And one day on Kolab is 1,000 years on Earth due to the way that it orbits the sun. We're going to take a break and we'll be back. Dr. Jason Rand and Lucas right here on the Intel Hub. You're listening to the Intel Hub right here on American Freedom Radio. Of course, our website is theintelhub.com. I always encourage everyone to check out our website. It's known as the Civilian Intelligence Agency, the CIA for the people, by the people. Check out all the great news. We're getting ready to probably head back down to the Gulf. We might go down there with Project Gulf Impact to do some on-scene reporting, some guerrilla style reporting, where we quite possibly might even just pop out of swamps with ghillie suits and start filming. Who knows? All sorts of crazy stuff we got planned right here at theintelhub.com. We talked about ancient civilizations, the Vatican, different religions. I was talking about the Mormon Bible and this planet Kolob. And their different timeline that they're on. Because of the way the planet rotates around the sun, from your guys' knowledge, we'll start with Lucas and then go to Rand. Would it really be like that? If another planet or a brown dwarf star orbited it took it 3,600 years to orbit, are they going to have a different lifespan on that planet if there was life on that planet?
Well, yeah, of course, that anything that has different variables in space is going to be, different in its mechanisms, because, you know, everything is a product of its environment, basically. And, for instance, it says that people used to live a long ages, a long time ago they used to live to be in the hundreds of years old. And who's to say that maybe at some point in time this object comes up much further away from us and we get bombarded with a lot less subatomic particles, and thus our lives, we don't die of cancer at age 75. But, and then sometimes it comes up closer to us, and the human body just gets hit with so many subatomic particles that it can't withstand a lifespan more than 75 years. So, there's a lot of a lot of the ancient stuff, whether it be the Mormon or whether it be Christian or Muslim or Judea, it all pretty much centers around this stuff, pretty much. You know, it's like all the religions are battling back and forth about who's the right one, and at the same time, they're all pretty much right. It's just a different story.
You know, yeah, that it's just so interesting, guys. It's so, every single major religion and sub-major religion and sub-major religion, they all have the same deity, the same type of inception. They all have, interestingly enough, the final disaster scenario, and it's always about an invader from space. All you have to do is learn how to read the legends and do the research. Now, all of them talk about the sun going crazy. In all of the legends, it all points to Mother's Sun, which, of course, the Egyptians worshipped as Ra, okay? Now, I just want to talk about the sun real quick, okay? Ours is a fusion star. We call it the sun. The sun's activity usually ebbs and flows on a fairly predictable cycle. Typically, a normal solar cycle lasts about 11 years, taking roughly 5.5 years to move from a solar minimum, which would be a period of time when there are fewer sunspots and less violent solar activity, back to peak at the solar maximum 5.5 years later, during which sunspot activity now becomes amplified and begins to change the dynamics of planet Earth. Now, the last solar maximum occurred in 2001 was not a good year for the planet in terms of natural disasters. You can check that out on your own. Now, the latest minimum period was this latest minimum period was particularly weak, and it lasted far too long. Just now, within the last 6-8 months, the most recent solar action and this eruption is one of the first signs that our sun is now suddenly waking up and heading towards what could be a record-breaking solar maximum. Normally, that solar maximum would be cycling at the top in about the July, August, September of 2011. That would be when it would normally have reached the end of its 5.5-year rise up to the top. Now, for the last 16 months or so, our sun has been terribly quiet, very normal. The solar minimum lasted way too long, and it was very weak. Now, all of a sudden, the sun is suddenly coming back to life. That's not good, because if the sun starts coming back like the crazies it just sent us with this huge solar blast, we could be in for some rough times. So let's not stand around and say, oh, this could never happen. It's phony science.
You know what?
We're experiencing it.
I noticed that the sun, there was a coincidence. I'm calling it a coincidence for lack of words, but when the NEAT comet, V1, I think it's called 2002, that comet went around the sun. It was. I saw a definite pattern of burying this all across the internet. And right at the moment that comet went around the sun, the luminosity, the magnetic field, and the sunspots basically just went right through the floor. And the sun has not been the same since the NEAT comet went around it.
No. Keep in mind, anything that affects the sun affects the planet Earth and all of the other objects in this. By the way, the asteroid belt came at this time about 4.5 to 5 billion years ago, because that's probably the remnants of some of the big planets that may have been struck by this intruder 4.5 to 5 billion years ago.
Yeah, Uranus was struck. That's why it's on its. That's why they speculate it's on Saturn. It's got huge scarring at its south pole.
Yes. Yes. Yes, yes. Now, if all this proves out to be true, guys, we got some tough road home. We better get prepared, and we better stop whining about what's going on, you know, in politics and all this other stuff. If that's all they've got to talk about, that's a great cover-up for what I think is really going on.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And a lot of this New World Order type actions that we're seeing from the elite literally could be a side effect or a symptom of preparing for a total disaster. So we're looking at that possibility. And for the listeners out there, you know, pretty much everything we're talking about is documented fact. Like Dr. Rand was saying in the beginning of the broadcast, NASA's the one that named it Planet X. They discovered it with their satellite. It's not a conspiracy theory.
They named it. They named it, announced it, and then they hid it for 20 years.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they. I think that they've known about it for at least 100 years. If anybody really wants to get their mind blown away, and a lot of people don't even know about this event, but you need to research an event called the Miracle of the Sun. And I think that the Miracle of the Sun was some sort of intelligence trying to warn us of the events coming in the past. You'll notice that that happened right about the time, right before at World War One, and the whole Federal Reserve was being formed, and the world was forming into this global union of nations. That the Miracle of the Sun happened, and most people don't even know about that. And then once you research it, it'll send chills down your spine because it was witnessed by 90,000 people and well documented.
Let's open the phone lines up, guys. Let's go ahead and take callers. Anyone wants to talk to Dr. Jason Rand or Lucas, call in right now, 402-237-2525, 402-237-2525. Open phone lines the rest of the show. We're talking about Planet X, all sorts of issues, ancient civilizations. You know, the Mayans. What do you guys make of the Mayans? There's these legends that the Mayans just disappeared. Their civilization all of a sudden was there, and then it just was gone. What do you make of that?
Well, I think, you know, that there might be some sort of gravity event also that might play into effect here on certain places of the Earth. If the world is pulled away from the sun, you know, if our orbit has changed, certain parts of the planet facing the whatever object is out there will, you know, might lose some gravity, and maybe these whole civilizations just simply floated right off the planet. Who knows?
Well, how about this one? How about maybe there were some big space travel type guys who thought, well, let's give these Indians a break, and they whisked them away because, you see, they had all the secrets. The Mayans were extremely sophisticated, as were the Aztecs. Even through their brutality, their religious rites and all that stuff, aside from that, they were brilliant cultures.
And
there have been brilliant cultures before them, so I think that they were, in fact, whisked away. I think they were raptured out because the whole culture ended simultaneously. It's never been seen before.
Yeah, not only that, the legends and myths of levitation probably come from people seeing other people being whisked up into the sky, whether it be into a ship or out into space. You know, I think a lot of these myths come from actual fact.
Well, and we've seen this with things such as the Coral Castle. You've got myths
down in Florida.
Yeah, he would build his castle. He would just kind of have a rope tied around this massive block of coral, and it's just like floating above him. Puts all this whole thing together.
It's an amazing place to visit.
Yeah, pretty interesting story. And then we still got to figure out how were the pyramids built, because they still can't build one to this day. So,
well, yeah, you have all those. You have two million blocks. Okay, obviously, to anybody who looks at that, that has to be. You can't write that down on paper. You can't blueprint out 2 million blocks on paper. That's got to be done with a computer program somehow.
Oh yeah, and they've got.
Imagine the power source it took to power that computer.
Man, and they've got the saw overcuts at some quarries where you could tell they actually had some kind of technology, some kind of saws. They've drilled into these things. I don't care how good you are at carving something, you're not going to carve a perfectly legitimate, totally straight block that I've seen in some of these bone yards where they still have some of these blocks sitting where they were mining them. I mean, unprecedented, you know, specifications and tolerances on these blocks they were carving, and it just makes you wonder, you know, what kind of technology was involved, what was going on back then, because, you know, the way they try to and I believe this is a, you know, a scam that they pull, or they're trying to hide this technology or dumb down the masses. But you know, you go back through the textbooks and you listen to what you're taught in school, and they're just like, oh, it was the Stone Age back then. They just carved into stone because they were primitive. Well, no, really why they carved into stone is because they knew a big disaster was coming in. They knew that would be the only thing that would stand the test of time, that they could get their message carved into, because even like steel, if you engrave something into like a steel plate, it would just totally rust out and erode. So in my opinion, the reason they carved in stone was not because they're primitive. They probably were able to write on paper all day long. It's to preserve that record. What do you guys think about that?
Well, here's the point. Here's the point. With all the ingenuity and power of all the computer systems and all the equipment we've got now as a 21st century a planet, we couldn't rebuild the Great Pyramid at all. We wouldn't even been able to attempt it. Mm-hmm. So, with that in mind, you have to ask yourself, maybe there is something to this whole ET, UFO ET thing. And I'd like to go back to that for a second, if we might.
Mm-hmm.
Sightings are up now all over the planet. As you know, there are only about 7 or 8 countries which still yet refuse to release their UFO files. And obviously the U.S. is one of them. So we've got a project we're working on called Project Blue Light.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to do is, and if the Intel help would be interested, let's put something together with you guys, Project Blue Light. We want to start collecting UFO information again and pick up where Project Blue Book left off. See?
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we're going to make it public and not make it subject to government secrecy.
Yeah, that UFO over Russia, that pyramid-shaped UFO, was something else. I'll tell you, that's you know, obviously they've for thousands of years they've documented this stuff. They've seen extraterrestrial beings and they put them down on rock a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, it's the, I mean, that's all covered in the Chariot of the Gods, and it's just amazing how, like I said before, it's some sort of human natural selection. You know, that's why the push to get the whole human gene sequence prepared, that way they can, you know.
Lucas, we got a break. We'll be right back with Dr. Rand and Lucas. This is the Intel Hub. Look, we're back. We're known as the Civilian Intelligence Agency. You know, we wouldn't be much of a civilian intelligence agency if we didn't report on things such as Planet X or UFOs. There's been hundreds of thousands of documented UFO cases in history, documented UFO sightings, all sorts of information surrounding unidentified flying objects. Planet X has been documented by almost every civilization throughout history. So when we bring you these subjects, this isn't like we're reporting on chupacabras and fairies. We're actually reporting on legitimate stuff here, and it's just important for everyone to know that, all the listeners. You know, this kind of information needs to get out there. People need to be aware of it. It's happening, and things like this really do go on. Dr. Rand, you know, if someone wants to get in a phone call, you better do it in the next 2 minutes. The number is 402-AFR-2525, 402-AFR-2525. Call for Lucas or Dr. Jason Rand. Rand, why don't you continue with the telling us about what you're working on in Project Blue Light, and then we'll let Lucas plug his site and tell us what he's been working on.
Sure. Just go to our website, returntoplanetx.com, a little hyphen between the T and the X. You can find out all about Project Blue Light. What we want to do is we want to bring the concept of Project, the old Air Force's Project Blue Book. We want to take that concept, less the secrecy and less the government secret aspect about it, and we want to turn it into a legitimate research gathering tool and organization. And anyone that has something to contribute becomes a part of it. Instead of becoming the enemy of the state, you become a friend of the state. You see?
Absolutely.
And I think that if we welcome this information, I'd love to hear Lucas comment on that, what he thinks about it. Instead of treating it as a pariah, as something that's played down, let's take it very seriously, because I think that there are videos and there are photographs and there are probably testimonies that we really need to start examining. Because if there is an UFO ET event about to descend upon the planet, then what we need to do is simply get prepared for that possibility also, to understand that there could be, just like in Independence Day, suddenly these ships appear. Unfortunately, they might get a negative vibe to it, but I think we better start thinking about the possibility that there could be an increase of not only landings, but physical contacts with such things as ETs and unidentified flying objects, flying saucers.
Guys, we're going to go to a caller real quick and jam one call in before we got to get to Lucas. Caller, you're on the air. This is Shepard from the Intel Hub. You're on the air with Dr. Jason Rand and Lucas.
Hello, fellas. I've been listening to you for about an hour now, and I'm really enjoying it. You talked about the Carl Castle, and I studied the Carl Castle for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my opinion of the Carl Castle is that it's a power plant that has more natural energy than any atomic power plant.
Well, and a lot of things I've read allude to the fact that the pyramids might have been some form of generation system. Caller, we got to answer this off air. I'll let Jason Rand and Lucas comment. Go ahead.
I think that it's possible that everything that you've mentioned in the last 2 minutes of conversation with everyone, all of it is real. Everything. The caller's perception about the stone castle down toward the Keys is very perceptive. Yes. And he also, I'll add to that, he built it on a null zone power point, you see, where the two major crosshairs of the two crisscrossing power grids of the planet happen to cross. That's where he built it. That's what gives it its energy. And that's about where pyramids are built over and major religious sites. Everything is very well planned.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
If you look underneath the ocean, go onto Google Earth and go off the coast of Florida. I don't have the exact coordinates with me, but look underneath the water. You'll notice a freshwater lake or a lake that used to exist there at one point in time, a long time ago. And right up north from it is two structures that look like huge pyramids. So that's something to look at as a possible place for Atlantis off the coast of Florida. And
absolutely. Do you guys remember a book called The Bermuda Triangle?
Oh, yeah.
It was written by Charles Berlitz and Dr. J. Manson Valentine. Well, yours truly here had the distinct honor. I worked with them for 6 years in the Bermuda Triangle while they were doing the research and writing, and I was part of all those experiments. And I helped shape the course of the discussion of the book.
Guys, we're running out of time.
We did the diving and the research.
Both of you back on. Lucas, why don't you plug your site? Tell us where to find all your information, and then we'll let Rand plug his site. Caller, sorry we had to cut you off short. Just call back into another show. You're welcome anytime.
I'll be glad to, because I got more to say. I loved your show.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, well, I wanted to tell everybody to visit the rabbithole2.com. You can actually watch the presentation free online and research the whole rabbit hole presentation. The name of the video is The Destroyer Star in the Future of Mankind, and you can actually buy that, help support the site right there from the website. And it's just a plethora of information. It'll take you a few weeks to go through.
Sounds good. Rand, plug your site.
Okay, returntoplanetx.com, a little hyphen between the T and the X. We take you through the beginning, the end, the duration, hopefully the prophecy of what is about to happen. And everything that we've talked about in the book, which took 7 years to write and research, everything is happening on target and on schedule. Now is the time to stop saying, well, what if? Now the time is, what do we do and how quickly can we get ourselves prepared? That's the message, not to be afraid or confused. Let's just get the job done, okay?
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for coming on the Intel Hub. We'll have to get you back on next month and do it again.
Well, thanks
good
for
night,
having
everybody.
Us. Good night, and thanks for having us.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, there they go. Dr. Jason Rand, author of The Return of Planet X, and Lucas, from rabbit hole to .com. You're listening to the Intel Hub. Don't forget to go to our website, theintelhub.com. Subscribe to our Overwatch report. And you Intel soldiers out there, keep pumping the information out. Keep passing the information along. Do your research. Carry a camera with you all the time. Submit any tip, information, troop movement, police brutality, anything out of the ordinary, submit it to tips@theintelhub.com. You guys have a good weekend. We're out of here. We'll see you next week.